Isn't this a sports show? Almost entirely.
What is going on?
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
But yeah, I think this segment just went to Marconi.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
So I have a cough button in front of me.
You do.
That I'm not sure is actually my cough button. Let's find out. Nope, that's not mine.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
The computer mouse and I are feuding today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You need nothing like that. Like
I went left and it went right. Literally, that's what it just did.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome in, welcome in. Thursdays are always hectic because I'm trying to get set up in here as Sprott's takes on their way out. Like right now, I can't hear myself in my headphones. I'm guessing my microphone works. It's not your fault, Beards. It's the broken headphone jack. And now I'm reading the story that Beards sent me about some of this NCAA corruption stuff. And I'm desperately trying to, like, verify its potency as the intro is playing. Because there's something from a site that I've never seen before. It's about KU and a recruit in Adidas, and I don't even know. I don't know if this website is any sort of worthwhile. I have no idea. I have just thoroughly no idea. So we're not gonna start there. I thought we might. So I was reading it, and I'm waiting for some confirmation from some things. We might end up going back to that NCAA violation story later on in the show today. But we're going to start with the Chiefs, and really, this is how fast this pre-show stuff has moved. Beards, there are two pieces of sound in my folder. There's a Lebatard thing talking about the Chiefs, and then there's Kareem Hunt from today. I haven't decided where we're going to get in any of those things, because today has been moving too quickly. I'm also finding out, like, radio things as we're going. It's just a lot. There's just a lot going on today. And we're going to spend most of today, I would guess, talking about Kareem Hunt and the Chiefs and Alex Smith. Unless the NCAA folds in on himself. Oh, man. I so wish this show would have started 2 minutes later. I needed these 2 minutes so bad. I'm so not ready for this. Because I'm trying to read responses now that I'm getting about this NCAA thing. I got a whole bunch of reasons from somebody saying, yeah, that might, we don't know. And then it'll end on a cliffhanger, so maybe we'll get back there. There are a lot of directions that we can talk about, we can go in with the Chiefs as we prepare for a Monday night matchup between them and Washington. And the place I keep going back to is the Alex Smith conversation, because it just seems like we're never getting anywhere. And I don't want to start pecking at the eyes of Alex Smith. I also don't want to make this a Patrick Mahomes conversation, because it's not that. But I am supremely interested in what we expect from Alex Smith. It's the conversation that we had throughout the whole preseason, and we're going to have it all season long also. Week one, Alex Smith outperformed Tom Brady. Week two, he outperformed Carson Wentz. And week three, he outperformed Phillip Rivers, but in different ways for all three of those games. There was a stat that we pulled out a couple days ago. That is no longer currently open on my computer, because this is a professional organization that we're operating here. It was pulled up from ESPN. It was percentages of passes thrown 5 yards or fewer downfield, 5 or fewer yards downfield. Where in week one, Alex Smith had 57% of his passes thrown 5 or fewer yards downfield. Week two is 64%, and last week was 86%. That's a huge elevation. In fact, 86% of his passes thrown 5 yards or fewer downfield is the highest percentage in his career with a minimum of 2 passes. and that makes me nervous. But I think you can also say, well, listen, also in each of those games, every single day, the offensive line got worse. The offensive line's best day was week one. Its second best day was week two. Its third best day was week three. And I would agree with that. I think that's fair. I think a large part of Alex Smith's timidity in week three especially was because Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram were getting back to him, making him nervous, putting some pressure around him, making his feet move, and making him a little more wary of throwing the ball downfield. It didn't give us much time for longer plays to develop. I get that. I acknowledge all of that. I'm with you. However, this is where, historically, I'll say it this way so you cannot be the buzzards around this take that so many of you want to be. Get away, buzzards. Listen to me. Historically, in fact, every single game of Alex Smith's career in Kansas City, other than that Indianapolis game and this year against the Patriots, basically everything else, if you look at Alex Smith as a full sample size, he's a guy that whenever the kitchen gets hot, around his feet get messy, whenever he gets nervous, whenever he gets jumpy, the ball starts mysteriously traveling shorter and shorter distances. Historically, that's been true. And against New England and against Indianapolis back in that playoff game, Nick Jacobs, we've had on this show several times, he said that though the New England game week one this year was the best game from the offensive line that he had seen in front of Alex Smith since the playoff game in Indianapolis. And those are the two best games I've ever seen of Alex Smith in red and gold. I don't think that's a coincidence. So if you have a preconceived notion now of, I will defend Alex Smith because I don't want to go back to Tyler Palko days, then you can say, well, listen, man, if this offensive line is any good, then Alex Smith looks like an all-time great. Just get me that offensive line in front of Alex Smith and we don't have anything to worry about. But if you look around the league, this can be Marcus Mariota, it can be Aaron Rodgers, which I'd like to look. I know he's on a different level, but you can look to Aaron Rodgers for sure. Even Tom Brady. Whenever they are consistently getting rattled, their eyes go deeper downfield. And again, this is not an argument for Patrick Mahomes taking this job right now, okay? If you I swear, God in heaven, if you misinterpret this, I'm not going to respond to your tweets. But it's one of the traits that Patrick Mahomes has that's very exciting to me for whenever he does end up in this lineup. I'm very excited by the idea of a quarterback who, when under duress, keeps his eyes downfield because that's where big plays happen. We've always known that Alex Smith can be good behind the good offensive line whenever he has time and whenever his receivers end up in open space. Last week, he took two of those shots, two receivers in open space. One was a touchdown to Tyreek Hill. One was a bad pass and complete to Tyreek Hill. Brian Baldinger, a few days ago, went through the whole thing, was going through a bunch of tape and stuff, said, hey, here's a play, that check down that he had to D'Anthony Thomas, said, hey, here's a play where he had Chris Conley open downfield, but he got scared off, he got spooked, so he checked it down to D'Anthony Thomas instead. D'Anthony Thomas in space, so he picked up some yards and you move on. But he had a big play on the sidelines to Chris Conley if he would have taken it and would have gotten the ball there. We've always known a lot of these things about Alex Smith that some of you seem to be pointing out as evidence of a changed man. I would love for Alex Smith to be what we saw in week one exclusively from here on out. But I don't believe week one outweighing the rest of the sample size we've had of Alex Smith. I think that's a type of reactionary that is silly to give into. Does that make sense? Like, I feel like what I'm doing here is pretty reasonable. I feel like what we're doing here, it makes enough sense. Don't let these 60 minutes of pure ecstasy outweigh everything else that we think we believe about Alex Smith based on the larger weight of evidence. It's silly. And again, be optimistic, and I'm not talking about Alex Smith so I can eventually talk about how Patrick Mahomes win a Super Bowl with his team right now. It's not what I'm doing. But our evaluations of Alex Smith, I think, are really interesting. And we'll get to a little bit of a national perspective here in a little bit. Dan Le Batard and Stugatz and Mina Kimes today were talking about the Chiefs for like 2 minutes. But I thought it was interesting because they say some things that I think we should take to heart and some things I think they're just wrong on. We'll touch on all that a little bit later. But I hear the conversation about the Chiefs' offense. I hear the conversation about Alex Smith. And I just think we get caught up in the weeds of the most recent thing we've seen outweighing everything we've seen for years. And this is what I was saying throughout the preseason that now gets occasionally, not only when everything's going well, but it gets occasionally brought back up to me and says, oh, you whiffed on this one. Here's what I was saying. We know what Alex Smith is. He can get the ball to his playmakers, and if he has a good offensive line, he could make some plays of his own. That's never been the question, and that's what we've seen him do this year. But now the question is, when you look to the other guys around the league, when you look to Aaron Rodgers, you look to the quarterbacks who win in mass and who win in the playoffs, what happens when you are under duress? Do you find the holes in the defense downfield and put together these offensive stretches that just simply put a defense on its rear? Or do you throw 86% of your passes 5 yards or fewer throughout the game? We know which one Alex Smith is going to do. We know what Alex Smith is going to be. And that's also not a slight on Alex Smith. It's simply an assessment. It's an assessment with facts and with a huge sample size. The idea that the preseason analysis on Alex Smith was wrong because of a really good standout game is just silly to me. I need more games where literally just even slightly more than half of his passes are 5 yards or fewer thrown downfield. Five or fewer yards thrown downfield. But that's not what the Chiefs were ever betting on here. What the Chiefs are betting on with Alex Smith is, all right, we're going to have you throw, again, week one, almost 60%, week two, almost 65%, week three, almost 90%. We're going to just have you get the ball to the playmakers, have them win some games for us. We're going to win a bunch of games. We're going to get the playoffs, and then we're going to lose to Tom Brady. I have a really hard time shaking that feeling with this team. I have a really hard time brushing this sort of feeling of impending doom away. And it's not just because I'm a cynic, but it's because I've seen these games be played before. I think the Chiefs are going to win a lot of games, and I still think you can call them a contender. I think that's still totally reasonable. But I don't really think you can look at Alex Smith right now and say, this, what I've seen through 3 weeks, shows me that he is a changed quarterback. And that's all I ever argue. I've never argued that he's a terrible quarterback. I've argued that he's the same quarterback. That's all. Is that so rude? Is that so offensive? And really, I think if he does elevate throughout the next 13 games of this season and then hopefully several more into the playoffs, if he does elevate, it's going to be the thing we talked about a couple weeks ago, which is that quarterbacks can be elevated by their weapons, and I think that's still the case with Alex Smith. I think he can look better this year than he ever has before. But I still fight the idea that there's a fundamental change that is going to happen in Alex Smith's DNA. It's going to change who and what he is as a quarterback. I just don't buy that. I don't know how you could or why you would. I mean, I guess if you did it after week one, you probably also did it after the Colts playoff game. And then you didn't see it again for, what, 2 calendar years? I can't help but shrug. I think we're going to talk to Seth Kaiser of Arrowhead Pride tomorrow. He had an article about the evaluation of Alex Smith last week. We'll touch on that a little bit later on. Also, if you want to give the show a call, you can call the show at 913-491-8255. If you want to talk about the Chiefs, we're on Facebook Live right now on the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page. You can throw your comments up there. Also, you can always tweet me at JB Briscoe. All right. Whenever we come back, we're going to talk about Seth's article and do a little more look into the Chiefs. And I'm also going to try to figure out if any of this NCAA FBI news is real. That's the world we're living in right now. It's a roller coaster. Straight to hell.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I just told you there are 17 starting quarterbacks in the NFL I'd rather have than Alex Smith.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Four guys who could go either direction. You split that off. I just put Alex Smith at 20. Is that true? Did I just put Alex Smith at 20? Oh, God. My Twitter mentions are going to be a pain.
On ESPN Kansas City.
They have been a pain. My Twitter mentions have been a huge bleeping pain. For the last, like, I don't know, 4 months. By the way, just since this came up now, Chris Mortensen was on Le Batard today also. He said that he thinks the Chiefs feel like they have something extraordinary in Patrick Mahomes. Because Stugatz asked him about the Alex Smith trade rumors. The Chiefs will be fielding offers. And Mortensen said, in fact, I should have grabbed this down also, and I didn't even think about it after I heard it today. He said, you know, he was kind of just answering the question, you know, and if they win the Super Bowl, is that going to change? I don't know. So, like, Mortensen was out there saying the Chiefs could win the Super Bowl with Alex Smith and still be going on to the Patrick Mahomes experience next year.
Yeah, that'll go over well.
Chris Mortensen said it, not me. And they're not going to win the Super Bowl.
Well, I'm just, like, fans would not enjoy that.
I don't know. I don't know. You know. Whenever I wasn't sure what the cutoff point was going to be, whenever they fired John Dorsey and everyone was like, "Oh, Andy Reid's got it." Like, okay. And I did a little bit of that also. I didn't love it, but I kind of, well, it's probably fine. Like, if Andy Reid puts his signature down on something, I think most Chiefs fans are going to kind of just be cool with it until it backfires. And if they think they have something extraordinary in Patrick Mahomes, I guess that would make sense to move on to the next thing and try to win with less, basically, or having to be around him. I digress. But that was one thing from Le Batard today that involved the Chiefs. So as I mentioned, Seth Kaiser had an article that we're going to read, Beards. We're going to read from the internet here in a second. He had an article reviewing Alex Smith all 22 tape versus the Chargers, and the headline was "Not bad, not great," which is also, like, I think the official title for Alex Smith autobiography coming out in 10 years. And I'm going to give you his sort of takeaways without giving you all the stats. If you want to read the whole thing, it's on Arrowhead Pride.
And now, Josh reads the internet.
I looked at Alex's snaps on all 22 again, just like every week, and he wasn't as good as he was the first 2 weeks. I feel like that ought to do it, no? Now, let me be a little bit more clear. I don't think Alex was necessarily bad against the Chargers. He had what I would call a pretty meh game. Not terrible, but not good either. He didn't really hurt the team too much, but he didn't really help the passing game on a day it was struggling outside of one early throw either. Just meh. That's the introduction, then he gives you a whole bunch of numbers. Here are the last three paragraphs of this. Overall, there's not much to say about this game outside the fact that it was a game Alex wasn't asked to do outside of maybe 7 to 8 plays, and he had middling results on those snaps. The good news is that Alex had another deep shot. I can remember stretches in previous years when we went multiple games in a row without seeing completed 20-plus yarders, and we've seen one every week this year. That's something. To Hill, which once again forces defenses to think about what they're doing out there. This game looked a lot more like some of Alex's games in 2016 by my eye. Not one of his bad games, mind you, just a little more meh, a little worse in the pocket, hesitating a bit more on throws, not making as many read the field plays. I blame it all on the pass rush, but Alex played significantly better against a very good pass rush the week prior, so I'm not sure that's it. I'll be at Arrowhead Monday night, and my hope is that what we saw Sunday was the new floor for Alex. It'd make for a considerably higher floor than we've previously seen. So far this year, Alex has been more than just okay, but for one week at least, he was hovering there, or a notch below. That's Seth. That's Seth Kaiser writing. He watches Alex Smith's film every week, and that's the takeaway. That's the end. Last week wasn't good. You probably know that because you weren't tweeting me about it. I got tweets on that touchdown early to Tyreek Hill, and then I never heard about it again. And I don't hate Alex Smith. I don't. Beard is gonna cut "don't" out of that. You're so predictable.
Who said that's what I was gonna do?
Because you marked it, and then I said I don't hate Alex Smith, and then you marked it again.
I didn't even think about that until you said that. So thanks for the idea.
But I do not hate Alex Smith. I hate Andy Dalton and Bill O'Brien. And the Broncos and the Raiders. That's really it. And Roger Goodell sometimes. I don't hate Alex Smith. I really don't. I just think that what we've seen from Alex Smith is a fair representation of him. And so here's the thing. This is where I get a real problem. This is where I have a real logical problem with Chiefs fans who are very, very pro Alex Smith. This is where the logic gets to me. Even if you just have this season's three games, even if you push away the decade of Alex Smith tape that we have, week one was the high point, week two was the average point, week three was the low point. But if I try to have a conversation whenever I say, you know what I think Alex Smith is? I think he's week two against the Eagles. And he's going to hit that Chargers game a couple times a year. He'll have a Patriots game once or twice a year. If I say that, someone's going to freak out at me. And it drives me crazy. We have seen, and then you have to go back out to larger sample size, we have seen so few games like we did in week one from Alex Smith. We've seen lots of games like week two. We've seen too many games of week three. And worse. But even if you just have these three games, even if that is all you have, if you come out of that and say, well, week one was clearly the norm, week two and week three were an aberration, then I just can't, we can't have this conversation, can we? There's so much we've seen. Acting like you're super confident in the expectations and putting all your eggs in week one Alex Smith's basket is just, it just seems silly to me. I don't... And I know that I'm always going to end up having that tone problem of somebody saying, you said Alex Smith sucks. You said the Chiefs can't win a Super Bowl with him. I mean, do you think they could win a Super Bowl with the Alex Smith that we saw on Sunday? Or the Alex Smith that we saw last season? Because they didn't. The Alex Smith we saw week one? Maybe. But they don't see that very often. That's all. That's all. And again, I do think that with the landscape of the NFL as it is right now, I think the Chiefs have about as good a chance as anybody. We talked about the Super Bowl odds some yesterday, I think it was 2 days ago, where the Chiefs have like the fifth best odds in the league or something to win the Super Bowl, and some people are just very disrespected by that. Well, it's just how it works. You're going to give Tom Brady a better chance to win the Super Bowl this year than Alex Smith, even though Alex Smith's team beat Tom Brady's team earlier on this season. It's just how it works. With that being put out there, I just sort of roll my eyes every time. Go, yeah, what do you expect? Again, not rage, not fury. Just what we've seen. All right, let's hear the Lebatard thing from earlier today. Dan Lebatard and Stu Gatz and Mina Kimes sort of found themselves stumbling over to a Chiefs conversation. I think this is an interesting look into a national perspective on the Chiefs, and there are several things in here that I think do have merit and a few things that I don't think have merit, and I'll break them all down after we hear this two-minute clip.
But where you're not confident that on both sides of the ball, they're complete. Seattle's complete on one side of the ball.
I feel pretty good about, you're going to object to this, I know. I feel pretty good about saying that about the Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay.
I mean, 3-0, they've won two road games. They blew out the Patriots at New England.
I think they're slightly above average in both offense and defense, and they're not excellent in anything, and that will get them beat in the playoffs.
I think we still haven't seen the effects of losing Eric Berry. It's going to be huge for their defense. I mean, their offense did not look that great on Sunday. It's not a good offense. It's fine. It has really creative coaching that other teams will figure out.
And it's got two playmakers. It's got two guys who will change a game plan with 80 yards of blur.
Well, and they've done it every week. I mean, one of those two guys has done it every week thus far. I think they lead the AFC in points scored.
Yes,
I know 45 came against the Patriots.
We have to pay attention to those skill guys. They're getting big plays. They're getting big plays off those bubble screens. They're getting big plays. Alex Smith's actually throwing the ball down the field. Who was it that threw the theory at us that he's feeling challenged for his job now with Mahomes, and so he's taking more risks?
Kian Fahey told us that the times that you've seen Alex being less risk-averse, it's when he has a quarterback behind him challenging him, gunning for that job. We've seen it with Kaepernick, and now we're seeing it with Mahomes.
I mean, their play calling is brilliant so far. Every Chiefs game I've watched, I've been fooled by the pre-snap motions. I always think Tyreek Hill has the ball, and then, you know, it's
right.
Kelsey with the shovel pass that he's throwing, and it's bizarre.
But that's the difference. Kelsey was your go-to guy. Now he's your third guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big difference.
I know, but their quarterback is still limited, and he hasn't been limited through three games, but I expect him to be.
We know who he is.
I mean, I feel like we do, but how much do the skill people help him?
Right.
Because we know who he is.
The play calling, which other teams are going to stop being fooled like I am.
He's a guy with a quarterback rating of 132.7.
He's
pretty good.
Great so far. Thank you, Stu Gatz. That's three games, as opposed to the 10 years we've been watching him when he's not that.
All right, that's Lebatard, Stu Gatz, and Mina Kimes talking about the Chiefs earlier today. Lots of stuff in there. Lots of things that I'm guessing that you, as a Chiefs fan listening to this, had your eye twitch at. And a couple things I think they got right. We can go chronologically. I think we have seen what this defense looks like without Eric Berry. Mina said we haven't seen that effect hit yet. I disagree. That defense has a heart without Eric Berry. That defense has a harder time defending the run, and they picked off Phillip Rivers three times, and they beat Carson Wentz, and they held down Carson Wentz just fine. All right, cool, good. Next, I really, the loss of Eric Berry matters. It matters, and it'll matter more against the Patriots again if they get there in the AFC Championship game or whatever. It'll matter against a team with a really powerful tight end. How many of those are in the league right now? Like, I play fantasy football, right? We all play, just about everybody plays fantasy football. You ever try to, like, spot start a tight end? You ever looked at that tight end market and said, oh, God, who's a sure thing here? Like, Delanie Walker is, like, the third best sure thing in football at the tight end position. it's Gronk, it's Kelsey, and you got like Delanie Walker, and Greg Olsen broke his foot, and now he's out, and Jared Cook. Martellus Bennett doesn't get any targets in Green Bay, even though it seems like that connection would make sense. Other than in those situations, this defense is holding up just fine. Zach Ertz was out there against the Chiefs in Week 2, doing pretty much nothing. Zach Ertz's best contribution in Week 2 was catching a ball that was batted up in the air and then running it for a near touchdown. That was the best play of the game for the Eagles offense. That doesn't count. That's a fluky thing that happens with or without Eric Berry. So I think we have seen this defense without Eric Berry. Has a harder time defending the run. The pass defense has been fine. It's been very good, frankly. I'm not worried about that. I think that's just somebody who gets caught up a little bit and what's the last thing I remember? Oh yeah, they lost Eric Berry. So I'm gonna pass on that one. And then this is the statement from in that whole clip that gave me the most trouble. Not was the most troubling to me, but gave me the most trouble as I tried to figure out, well, what do I believe here? Because at one point they say they're not a good offense. They've just got two guys who can give you 80 yards of blur at any point, plus Travis Kelce, and really great play calling. So, and I had a weird time there because I agreed with several of those statements in a row. Not a great offense. Two hugely explosive guys, and Travis Kelce, and Andy Reid conducting the whole thing. Why isn't that considered a good offense? And they're like the highest scoring team in the league right now, so saying not a good offense is too far. But do I think that's an absolutely top five offense? No, I don't. Why, though? And then it gets you back to a quarterback conversation. They said, you know, the quarterback is limited. But he's been great through three games. He has, like, one of the highest quarterback ratings in the NFL. We'll talk about that a little bit, too. Oh, he's got a great quarterback rating. And the thing at the end is what stuck with me. Yes, the three game sample size has been really good. They're 3-0. But also they say earlier on, hey, he's been throwing the ball downfield. Not really so much. Not a ton. Week 1 was better. Week 2 was less good. Week 3 was not good. Week 3 was his most conservative game in his entire career. But we've got a decade of watching Alex Smith when he's not what we saw in Week 1. The most recent thing we've seen from Alex Smith, if after Week 1 you were saying, oh, the most recent thing is the most important thing, then right now you should be doing the exact same thing. Saying, oh, Week 3 is the most important thing. Uh-oh. No. The most recent thing is the most important thing. Therefore, now he's back to the conservative Alex Smith that we have grown to know and tolerate. You're back to that sample size. And that's where this trend bothers me. And that's also where the divergence between a good enough quarterback, a good enough regular season quarterback, and a good enough to win playoff games quarterback, that's where that divergence really, really hits. What happens whenever your offensive line lets you down? What happens whenever your receivers get hurt? What happens whenever you start losing weapons and you start getting 350-pound monstrous men in your face 2 seconds after you snap the ball? What happens then? What happens then is that you find out what kind of quarterback you have. What happens then is the reckoning. The reckoning happens then. And I don't like the pattern we've seen from Alex Smith in that time. It worries me. Well, we'll spend another segment on Alex Smith here. We're going to take a break. Whenever we come back, I want to look at Alex Smith's quarterback rating versus his QBR. Adam Teicher wrote about this, had some interesting perspective. Talk about all that next year. Coming up next on Almost Entirely Sports.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
Alex Smith isn't a top 20 handsome quarterback? And Andy Dalton is?
With Joshua Briscoe.
How is Alex Smith not a top 20 quarterback in handsomeness?
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back. After much archaeology. I dug through ESPN and finally found the article I was looking for just seconds before we returned from this break. You know, ESPN put together the QBR stat. It's like quarterback rating, but it's gauged differently because quarterback rating is kind of contrived. And QBR is out of 100 instead of being out of this obscure number that no one fully understands. So in QBR this year, Andy Dalton is 32nd with a 16.6 QBR. Tom Brady has a 76.5. That's 32-1. In the quarter, in the QBR format, Alex Smith rolls in at the 16th spot in this also, frankly, system that I don't understand, which puts him one spot ahead of Jacoby Brissett, one spot behind Aaron Rodgers. If you would like to discredit this system, it is feasible that you may. But going off of the traditional quarterback rating, Alex Smith is number one through the first three games of the season. Now, Adam Teicher on ESPN.com went through and sort of pointed out, he gave his general take on it and everything. And if you want to read his like actual opinions, you can go to read his story. But he pointed out the reasons that Alex Smith is more poorly rated in the QBR system rather than in the traditional quarterback rating system. And this is a little bit nerdy, but if you're interested in how this all works, buckle up. So here are some of the factors holding Smith back in the QBR system. A large percentage of his passing yards have come after the catch. Chiefs receivers lead the NFL by averaging 7.54 yards after the catch. While this is true, none of Kansas City's five pass plays of 30 yards or more were short throws turned into long gains. Against New England, Smith threw for 40 yards on Tyreek Hill's 75-yard touchdown, and threw 31 yards on Kareem Hunt's 78-yard touchdown. Against Philadelphia, he threw 22 yards on Travis Kelce's 44-yard gain and 29 yards on Chris Conley's 35-yard gain. Against the Chargers, Smith threw for all 30 yards on Hill's touchdown. I think that's interesting because it shows you, in large part, the value of the weapons that Alex was throwing to. But also, it's either you're doing some creative math there to justify to say, this is silly because we're not crediting him for this. The math that is being done by the QBR system is still math. You can point out that on these big plays here, on these five plays of 30 yards or more, none of those were checkdowns from Alex Smith, which makes sense. But to have only five pass plays of 30 yards or more is not great, and to see how it devolved from week one to week three is also kind of bothersome. Also, a large part of the reason that the quarterback rating is so high is that Alex Smith throws for very high accuracy, which largely comes from short passes that then get picked up for an extra chunk of yards. That's how that works. That's the discrepancy there. Doesn't mean that Alex Smith sucks, and doesn't mean that he's the greatest of all time. It's just that's the understanding of it. Teicher also writes, Smith has the NFL's highest sack percentage at 12%. Smith has taken 12 sacks this season, but not all can be blamed on him. In any case, a sack isn't always a bad thing and is usually preferable to an interception. Smith hasn't thrown a pick. Again, obviously true, but the perspective on that is a little strange to me. To say that I don't think that you can fully acquit him of any and all blame of having the highest sack percentage in the NFL, especially after you saw the offensive line look pretty good in week one, and again, it sort of devolved. And also the mindset of, taking a sack isn't always bad is true, but also so frustrating to me. Because as accurate as it is, it's not very progressive for building a championship caliber football team. Next, Smith is 27th in the league in air yards per attempt at 5.81. Not sure why this is viewed as a big negative, particularly when he's getting the job done in almost every other area. This also, I think, is a poor evaluation of what the stat means. 27th in the league in air yards per attempt after just making the point a paragraph earlier that on the big pass plays, Smith has thrown the ball in the air. That's not frequent enough to make up for being 27th in the league total in air yards per attempt. That matters. Does QBR then favor aggressive quarterbacks? Of course. But to say, not sure why this is viewed as a big negative, particularly when he's getting the job done in almost every other area, that's the mentality that this Chiefs team has had for too long now. Saying, oh, well, as long as the job's getting done through the first 3 weeks of the regular season, we're good enough. Please, spare me. Last one here. Smith is tied for 28th in third down completions that go for a first down. He has six, but the Chiefs aren't throwing a lot on third downs. He's 27th in third down passes with 19. That's fine. That's a fine thing to point out. The 28th to 27th thing makes sense. At the same time, the ratio of being 6 for 19 on third down conversions whenever Alex Smith throws the ball is not my favorite stat of all time. That makes enough sense, right? You can get behind me on that one. That's not great, I guess. And listen, you can dive into the stats as deeply as you want, but eventually it is always going to come back to how you want to interpret this. For what you expect from your quarterback position, what you expect from Alex Smith, what surprises you, what doesn't, what throws you for a loop and what doesn't, it's always going to come back to that point. It's frustrating, but it is subjective. And on the plus side, Tyser says, meanwhile, Smith leads the NFL in completion percentage, 77.4, and touchdown percentage, 8.3. He's fourth in yards per attempt and is one of four quarterbacks who have started all three games and not thrown an interception. It's all their good stuff. Just a couple of different ways there of measuring quarterbacks. One that makes Alex Smith the best in the league. The other one that puts him right in the middle of the pack. It's the challenge of having some metric evaluations. Also, Tyser says throw in his 3-0 record. He's one of two quarterbacks to have such a mark. And Smith is far closer to number one than number 16. I would challenge that. Because just simply, the lowest you can be at being far closer is what? 7 or 8? Far closer? So, is he a top 5 quarterback in the NFL right now? Is that what Adam Tyser just said? I'm not willing to follow you to that place. Sorry. I hope that the successes continue. I hope we get more Week 1 Alex Smith. I really, really do. I much prefer Week 1 Alex Smith to Week 3 Alex Smith. Or maybe I should say I prefer Week 1 Alex Smith to 2016 Alex Smith. But also you fall into that trap of saying throw into his 3-0 record as if quarterbacks aren't constantly impacted by the guys around them. The offense wasn't good enough to win on Sunday. The team was. They got short fields and they capitalized, and at the end, Kareem Hunt puts the game away, makes everything look a whole lot better. The offense wasn't very good on Sunday. The team was. Alex Smith wasn't very good on Sunday. The team was. Oh man, we're going to get to a very Stu God's personal record book place with this, aren't we? Say, well, the Chiefs are 3-0, but Alex Smith's record is 2-1. Good enough to beat the Patriots and the Eagles, sure, but he lost to the Chargers even though the Chiefs won it. I don't really want to go to that place, but I'm afraid that we might end up there. And then Monday night's going to be super interesting. The quarterbacks, have a very difficult time on the road, prime time in Arrowhead. Imagine that Kirk Cousins is going to have a lot of that trouble also. We'll talk about a lot of that, though, on tomorrow. Tomorrow, and also Monday. That's all.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City. You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
The Patriots have been to the Super Bowl 5 times in 15 years, and Donald Trump is the only one to get a ring from the Patriots.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Seems redundant because Putin already has one.
On ESPN Kansas City.
That was such a good joke I had. Aren't I funny? Beards just said the Royals are apparently willing to throw out a $100 million deal to Eric Hosmer. Makes sense. They're going to get it done. R.I.P. Eric Hosmer era. It's over. Sorry. Kareem Hunt is currently doing amazing things. Before we go to Kareem Hunt, though, I've got something else that has caught my eye on several pages in a row. I am, you know those outbrain stories at the bottom of every damn digital publication on the planet? Outbrain is this, I presume, this sort of aggregator of these like sponsored stories that just try to be outrageous so you click them. And they are everywhere. Like, these aren't even just like the fringe, like Google ones that pop up, the AdSense stuff. These are everywhere. These are all over fan-sided. They're on 538. They're on ESPN.com. They're everywhere. Outbrain is this company that is ruling everything that has to do with getting paid for digital clicks on the internet. And I had just clicked past one that was like, remember Michaela Maroney? You won't believe what she looks like now. And went past one that says, our most shared recipes ever. Or, the forgotten Brady kid is back. Or, iconic Forrest Gump scene has one ridiculous flaw no one noticed. And I just sort of went past all of those.
Well, I mean, obviously somebody's noticed the flaw because there's an article about it.
That's a great point. But then there's one here that is... I almost clicked on it just to see how this would play out. In fact, you know what? Fine. We're gonna go down the rabbit hole.
You wanted to see what virus you'd download?
I'm going to do it. I'm on a Chromebook. You can't really infect a Chromebook. You can just give me a bunch of pop-ups. After losing 70 pounds, Susan Boyle is incredibly gorgeous. And it's a picture of Susan Boyle on like X Factor or whatever. She had like an amazing opera voice. It's a picture of her holding a microphone next to a picture of, I cannot stress this enough, just some woman in like a white tank top in very good shape with no face attached, decapitated just below the neck. You can also see some long black hair that very obviously does not belong to Susan Boyle. So I'm just going to click it now and see where this takes me. And then we're going to talk about Kareem Hunt. Oh, shocking. This went straight to the website it said it was going to be from. That's stupendous. Celebrity weight loss transformations. What really happened to these celebs? I can't wait to find out. Mariah Carey. That's right. Okay. Oh, it's a slideshow. No!
And of course, there's going to be an ad in between every one.
John Goodman. No. Oh, God. Alec Baldwin. Did Alec Baldwin ever get fat? Okay, whatever.
Well, we're down the hole now. Rabbit hole now. Let's just keep going.
Susan Boyle, I swear to you, is not Christina Aguilera. Okay. Susan Boyle is not going to be on this list because there's not
an after picture. She's going to be on the very last page.
No, she's not going to be here. Chaz Bona. She's not going to be here because there's not an after picture of Susan Boyle. Susan Boyle didn't lose 70 pounds and she's not a celebrity anymore. Chris Pratt. Right. So it's him from Parks and Rec. And then him is like a superhero god. I get it. I'm giving them, and I'm doing what they want. I'm clicking through all their pages. Queen Latifah. I hate this so much, and I hate slideshows. What's going to happen at the end of this, they're going to try to get me with another article. Zach Galifianakis. He looks the same in these two pictures. I hate slideshows. I hate them on every possible format. I hate them in power rankings. I've sworn off slideshows. I click this one just for today, just for right now, because I wanted to talk about all of this. I didn't know it was going to be a slideshow.
We all thank you for your sacrifice.
Christian Bale. Christian Bale lost like 100 pounds for that one movie.
The Machinist.
The Machinist,
or
right? Yeah. Never saw it. He was also never fat. Tyra Banks. Tyra Banks was never fat. And this keeps going. We're on page 11. Raven Simone. God, this is, I'm sorry. Oprah. We're on Oprah. And these things are getting out. I don't know who this person even is. Someone from American Idol. I've literally never heard of or seen this person in my entire life. What are you doing right now, Beard? You're staring at your computer.
All I did was image search Susan Boyle, and the first recommended search was weight loss. So I already, I found it before you could on the site.
I am through three different people that I've never heard of, and now Seth Rogen. All right, Beards, what did you find?
Let me figure out how much Two Stones weighs.
Carrie Fisher. Well, that's unfortunate. She's no longer with us.
Okay, so let's see here.
Adam Richman, the man versus food guy.
I hate to tell you.
Yeah.
Two Stones is only 28 pounds.
Yeah! It's not 70. She didn't have 70 pounds to lose. She's just kind of like an oldish lady. How old is Susan Boyle? Find that out for me now.
70 pounds would have been 5 stone.
Fantastic.
She is
50 cent apparently.
56.
Okay, that's like she's like she looks older than that. But like the woman in the picture cropped next to her, in no planet is or ever could be Susan Boyle. And to try to make my point, I actually fell directly into their trap. Aretha Franklin. We're on page 23. The internet is trash. Okay, I'm going to just go up to the URL and just run page 24 right now. I'm just going to put 35 and see if it takes us to another slide.
There are 24 pages?
Holy God, there are at least 35. I just went to page 35. Let's see if there are 55. No, it broke.
Well, we got to find out what's the end of this.
God.
40.
I'm going to go to 40. I'm going to go to 42. I'm going to split that difference. Now this bad radio is yours to make 42 hits.
46.
God. If you're listening to the podcast and you're like, oh man, I'm really excited for this Kareem Hunt conversation. Snooki, 46.
49.
I was going to let you listen to the Kareem Hunt audio while we do this. And 49 is there. Rebel Wilson. She looks the same.
Do you want to play the Kareem Hunt audio, and then you can figure out where this...
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay, set this up for us.
Kareem Hunt spoke today.
It's a great feeling, you know. I just want to keep it going. Keep going out every week and, you know, showing up.
So, go back over the touchdown run in L.A. There was a twinge of guilt about getting in the end.
Honey Boo Boo is on this list at page 53. She's a child. And there's not even a description.
We interrupt your Kareem Hunt audio.
I'm so upset. This is a child. Why is she on this list? That was the last one.
And that was at what?
53.
52 more than we needed, and none of them were the one we wanted.
And none of them are Susan Boyle. Bleep you out, brain. Sorry for interrupting your Kareem Hunt audio. All right, seriously, though.
Oh, now we're serious.
Kareem Hunt won the AFC Offensive Player of the Month award, AFC Rookie of the Month, I think, and AFC Player of the Week again. He's won 1,000 awards so far. He's beyond tremendous, and we're going to read a 538 article about Kareem Hunt after this. But now, without interruption, Kareem Hunt spoke to the media today about all the success he's had so far this year.
It's a great feeling, you know. I just want to keep it going, keep going out every week and, you know, showing up.
So go back over the touchdown run in L.A. There was a twinge of guilt about getting in the end zone on that one?
I mean, yeah, a little bit, you know. We wanted to end with the ball and just run out the clock, you know, not send our defense back out there, but it's hard to do that when you got a whole bunch of green grass in front of you.
Do you expect to get more of a workload? I mean, you haven't had like 20 carries yet, and there was a time in the third and fourth where you weren't getting it consistently. I mean, do you expect that to build up, or does Andy kind of tell you, hey, this is where we're at for the time being?
Not really. You know, I guess it's how the game's going, and we'll figure out how that goes. So if I get more of a workload, oh well, I'm ready for it.
Have you talked to guys about that back half of the season, once you get past the length of games that you would have played in a normal college season, getting through those next 5-6 games? Have you talked to people about how to make sure that you're prepared to keep running past that point, you know, for more games than you used to?
Yeah, I mean, it starts now, just taking care of your body every day and just doing little things. Even when you're not that sore, you just got to keep working, you know, to get your body all the way back together. So, you know, you got to take it day by day and, you know, week by week.
What's the soreness level now versus college? It hit harder, right?
I mean, yeah, you know, it's just you got to do a great job of protecting yourself out there. So, right now, I feel pretty good.
How do you manage it?
You know, just every day coming in, getting in the cold tub, just making sure I'm not taking big hits out there and just playing smart.
You got the ball a lot in college. How did you generally feel late in the season in college?
I mean, I felt pretty good. I played the whole college season and felt like I got better as the season went on, too. And just like I said, you got to keep going through it and just taking care of your body each and every day. You got to, you know, do the most you can do, live in the training room, and just do little things to take care of your body.
How's your life changed, I guess, here in the last few weeks in terms of recognition, phone calls, requests, do this and that and all that?
I mean, just, you know, a lot of people trying to reach out to you and, you know, a lot of people recognizing you wherever you go, you know, if you go to the store, out to eat, anything like that. It's just a lot more people, you know, trying to get to know you.
Anything real crazy happened or?
Not really. You know, I kind of stay in my own little world, you know, just hang out, talk to my same guys and, you know, keep a low profile.
So how many copies of the SOI did your mom get?
I probably got about 10 of them and my mom probably got about 15.
Everybody, a lot of people talk about your contact balance and everything. For you, is that something that you've learned and developed over time? Or is that something you're just born with and you just had from day one?
I feel like I was kind of born with it, but I feel like I got better as, you know, my years of football kept going on. In high school, I had really good contact balance, you know. I played in a lot of muddy games. Our field wasn't that great. And just always, you know, trying to stay up on my feet.
But you're saying trying to avoid the big hits. Part of your game is breaking tackles and going through. So how's that balance work? How do you both go through the hits and break them and also not absorb a big one?
You know, it's really angles and, you know, leverage pretty much. You know, you got to recognize who you're going against and how to take on a tackle and pretty much you just fill it out.
Kareem, a lot of teams are making preparations and plans for the national anthem. Have you had any discussion with your teammates about what you guys are going to do Monday night?
You know, it's freedom of speech. Those guys are going to do what they do and whatever they believe in, so not really.
You think about Washington jump out as opposed to the first three teams you've played? They've stopped the run a lot this year so far.
You know, it's a good defense. You know, they play hard and they got a good front seven and you know, just gonna keep going out there and doing what I do, and I know the O-line gonna go out there and, you know, give it their best too.
How studious do you get right now? Like, do you really get in there and figure out everything about what they're gonna throw at you, or are you kind of focused more on what you're gonna do?
Yeah, you got to know your opponent. So I go in there and, you know, figure everything out, sit down with my coach, and just go through it. And you got to know what they're going to throw at you.
That's Kareem Hunt speaking to the media today out at Chiefs practice. He's just, he's an absolute machine right now. And 538 had an article about Kareem Hunt that, in fact, came out like an hour ago. Just called Kareem Hunt is Breaking the NFL by Michael Salfino. Listen to this. Kareem Hunt is averaging 9.6 yards every time the Kansas City Chiefs give him the ball, including 8.5 yards per rushing attempt. The third-round rookie running back from the University of Toledo already has 6 touchdowns, more than any Kansas City running back had all of last year, and as many as any rookie through his first 3 games in history. And 3 of those scores have come from more than 50 yards out, which is as many as any player had all of last year from scrimmage, according to Pro Football Reference. And also something a rookie has never done in his first 3 games. At this point, no one would be surprised if Kareem Hunt grew wings and flew out of Arrowhead Stadium in Week 4. You know what? I'll say it. I would be surprised. But the most impressive thing about Hunt's scintillating NFL debut is his combined yards rushing and receiving. His total of 538 is the most by any rookie runner or pass catcher in his first 3 games since Billy Sims gained 562 for the Detroit Lions in 1980. Here's a look at the 812 rookies who accumulated at least 100 yards from scrimmage in their first three games. As you can see, Hunt and Sims are in a class by themselves. And then there is a wonderful chart, kind of a spray chart, of all of those rookies who gained at least 100 yards from scrimmage, rushing and receiving, in their first three games. You have this huge smattering of all these guys in the year that they're in, and Billy Sims and Kareem Hunt haven't gotten, no one's gotten even close to them since Cadillac Williams and Marshall Faulk. And even then, those guys are 100 yards behind. It's tremendous. This, again, back from the article. This was not supposed to happen. Hunt toiled in relative obscurity in the Mid-American Conference and did not impress scouts at the NFL Combine, running a 4.62 40-yard dash, which is beginning to look about as predictive as the pedestrian 4.59 that lowered Jerry Rice's draft stock in 1985. Hunt's NFL.com pre-draft scouting report raised a lot of red flags about his ability. Quote, average explosion, marginal downhill burst, too cute in the hole, could struggle to find chunk runs on the next level. Welp. That's why he was available for the 86th pick in the draft when the Chiefs traded up to select him. For the next couple of months, there was no indication this kind of explosive debut was remotely possible. Disagree, but whatever. Hunt instead was praised for his pass blocking and his ability to learn the system. Then incumbent starter Spencer Ware suffered a preseason knee injury, which translated into a field promotion for the rookie. Hunt responded by fumbling his first NFL carry. Remember how long ago that feels? But Chiefs coach Andy Reid was undeterred and gave Hunt the ball again on the Chiefs' next play, and it was off to the races. Hunt finished that upset with that upset 42-27 win over the Patriots with 246 yards from scrimmage and three touchdowns. As the Chiefs prepare for the Monday night game against Washington, the only people more excited than the Chiefs fans to watch what Hunt will do next are his fantasy owners. In the realm of fantasy, the nerdy underbelly of the NFL obsession, Hunt is already a god, a status rookies seldom achieve. Since 2000, here are the rookies who accumulated at least 20 traditional fantasy points in their first three games, which is also a good proxy for gauging overall production because it compares quarterbacks with running backs and receivers. Again, Kareem Hunt is on a new level. He is on this chart outscoring Robert Griffin, Cam Newton, LaDainian Tomlinson, literally everyone ever. Outscoring quarterbacks. That's mind-boggling. And then there's a little bit here about him looking forward, so if you don't mind me reading to you more, I'm going to do that. The question remaining is how long Hunt can keep up this level of production. The list of rookie running backs who accumulated eye-popping yards from scrimmage totals in their first three career games is dotted with legends who burst out of the gates when they reach the pro level, such as Hall of Famers Marshall Faulk, LaDainian Tomlinson, and Barry Sanders, each of whom notched 360 or more yards in games 1 through 3, but there are also plenty of players who would prove to be flukes. In 2005, Cadillac Williams notched 434 yards from scrimmage in his first three games, but would end his career with only 5,040 yards across six seasons. Cadillac's suspicious start reflects the greater trend. A running back's production in his first three games isn't a great predictor of how well the rest of his rookie season will go, much less his career. To measure this, we looked up the top 100 rookie running backs since 1950 in their first three games and found that the correlation between those totals and their rest of season output was just 0.19, which is a weak relationship on a scale of -1 to 1. That means it's still too soon to say for sure how big Hunt's stats will end up being. Based on the relationship above, we'd expect a running back with 538 yards from scrimmage in career games 1 through 3 to put up about 1,300 yards from scrimmage over the rest of the season, which, when added to the stats he's already produced, would give him 1,833 scrimmage yards. As far as rookie running back performances go, that's very good. It would rank 7th since 1950, but it would still leave Hunt hundreds of yards behind Edgerrin James's 1999 and Eric Dickerson's 1983 performances. In the meantime, Chiefs fans are just enjoying the ride. I think it's so fascinating. I think we're seeing something so incredible here. Like, literally, we already don't get it. We're already taking it for granted, which doesn't make any sense. It's beyond understanding for me to look at how we look at Kareem Hunt right now. And I promise you, take it for granted. He's doing things, and you can talk about on pace. He's on pace to do things that we've never seen before. Now, the correlation, as 538 pointed out in there, the correlation isn't super tight. But on a practical level, I think you look at what Kareem Hunt is doing, and I think you can pretty much pencil in what will and won't change. Last week, you could take away his big touchdown run at the end. If that just ends up being a first down carry and he gets snagged up as he crosses the first down marker, then the game is a whole lot less impressive. And still very impressive. There are big plays these guys have been making, Kareem Hunt, Tyreek Hill especially. Big plays that get made that don't seem foreign, that don't seem illogical or impossible. But the correlation thing does make you pause. Regardless, I think that we're seeing something incredible with Kareem Hunt, and I think we're largely seeing it in ways that are going to be continually replicatable. His yardage pace, his touchdown pace, obviously will drop. But his efficiency, his impact on this offense, I don't know how you can expect it to do anything other than continue throughout the rest of the season.